Hello, welcome to Flour, Butter, Eggs, Sugar. My name is Kate. I'm the host of this podcast, which is all about home baking by a home baker. So welcome, welcome, welcome. This is our first episode of 2022, or I guess it should be 2022. You tell me, I don't know. And I'm very excited that this is also the start of season two. So I've been taking some feedback from you. So I'm going to talk about what upcoming episodes are going to be like. I'm going to be talking about my baking resolutions for the year, what my kind of baking calendar is going to look like this year. I'm also going to be talking about sweet doughs and all of the different variations that you can come by making sweet breads and how that might relate to my baking year as well. And so as if that was not enough, I'm also going to kind of spotlight a couple of different sweet breads. So this time I made a brioche. So I'm going to be talking about how easy or not that was. And I'm also going to talk about the Tangzhong method and a special recipe that it took me over a year to actually try. To feedback on at least, but I'm so glad that I did. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode. Let's talk about baking resolutions. So something that was quite popular on with the preheated hosts of the podcast Preheated, which is wonderful if you've not listened to it before, was that they did like a 22 for 22 or a 21 for 21, etc. I thought about doing that, but I think that I just wanted to keep it a little bit more simple. And I wanted, what I've done is I've got like some overarching ones, just five of them. And then within that, there might be particular things that I want to try out or that I want to do. So my first kind of overarching one is to use the baking equipment and tools and tins and stuff that I don't use very much. So for example, I don't use my Bundt tin as much as I'd like to. I don't use my Madeleine tin as much as I'd like to. So, I mean, who knows what the future will hold, I guess. But I'd really love to start baking for other people a bit more. I pass on some of my baking to our neighbours and to people down the street. But, you know, there's not really been many birthday parties in the last 2 years due to obvious reasons. So I'm hoping that at some point in the future we'll be able to get back to that kind of thing and I'll be able to take cakes to people's houses for their celebrations. My second one is to use some of the ingredients that I've got hanging around that I bought on impulse. So these are things that I bought because I was curious or because they maybe were for one recipe, but I had to buy way more than was needed for that particular recipe, for example. So the things that I've got hanging around are chestnut paste, bought out of curiosity, buckwheat flour, like I wanted to try it out, and also curiosity and recipes. I wanted to make galettes, which I've not made yet, but I hope to soon. Rye flour, which I've used in a brownie recipe, but I've not really used it since. Maybe I'll use it for bread at some point. I've got rye sugar, which is really interesting. It's basically like the breadcrumbs of rye bread mixed with sugar. And I got this from the Scandinavian specialty shop, Scandi Kitchen. And basically, I think a lot of Scandinavian people have it just like on their oats in the morning. So I don't really eat oats that much, so I've not really done that. It's got a really interesting flavor profile, like it's quite sour as well as sweet. So I want to try and use that a little bit more if I can. I need to rack my brains and like rack the internet and find out what I could use it for. I've got some wholemeal spelt flour, which I just forgot it was there, to be honest. So I'm going to use that. I've got a tin of apricot halves. Now I do know why I bought this. I bought them because I wanted to make apricot pastries, and I've not gotten around to making croissant dough again, viennoiserie again, so I hope to use those at some point. I've got also some barley malt extract that I bought because I love malt, but I haven't actually used it, so I'm planning on hopefully putting that into ice cream, putting it into bread, maybe putting it into cakes. We will see. And finally, I've got some black cocoa hanging around that I plan to use. I want to use up the things that I've impulse bought. I also want to try and impulse buy less, because then it's just really annoying if you end up wasting things and it's a waste of money, and I just don't enjoy doing that. So hopefully I'll be able to use these, and then hopefully I will be a bit more selective and maybe not impulse buy as much. The third resolution is that I want to carry on upskilling and improving my skills. So I want to make pastry cream again, crème pâtissière again. And I want to use that in a custard tart, in fruit pies. And I want also to make more kind of fine desserts. So you might have noticed that what I love is like traditional cakes. I love biscuits. I do like pastry as well, but I'm a pretty simple baker. So I've not made either things like entremet or layered desserts. And I'm thinking maybe this year I will start. And also I really want to try making chocolate fondant maybe as another way to upskill. My fourth resolution is to bake and recipe test for others. So I want to bake for celebrations, if there are any, you know, coming up, depending on the situation with coronavirus. I also want to recipe test more vegan recipes, more gluten-free recipes. Don't go worry, I'm not going to go overboard, but I'm planning an episode about gluten-free baking. So I need to kind of finish my research and testing for that. I'm planning a vegan episode, so I need to finish my research and testing for that. So yeah, but you know, let me know if there's anything particular dietary requirements that you or loved ones have as well, and I will do my best, because actually I think that the person that inspired me to do this couldn't eat gluten and said they used to love baking, and I was thinking to myself, but sure, there's loads and loads of things you can't bake if you can't eat gluten, but there are also so many things that you can. So I really just wanted to show them like what's possible. And then my fifth one is to bake seasonally. So I want to use like British fruit that's in season. And although I've got listeners around the world, a lot of you are in the US. So I think that our seasons should roughly align, because, you know, you're in the Northern Hemisphere. If you're an Antipodean listener, I'm really sorry if that's annoying, because there might be, you know, I might be baking the strawberries in our summer, which is your winter, for example. But hopefully there'll be a mix of recipes for you to get involved with and to enjoy. So hopefully it won't be too irritating for you. But I just want to make the most of fresh produce, really. So I guess leading on from thinking about seasonal baking, but also like historical baking, I set about thinking, okay, I want to plan out my year of baking. This is so geeky, but whatever. I already run a baking podcast, so it can't get that much geekier. So I want to kind of try out, you know, I really enjoyed doing the German biscuits episode. I loved it. And I really want to try out a lot more different traditional baking from different times of year. So we're now past Epiphany, which is when in the Western Christian calendar, we've passed it anyway. That's when the Magi arrive. So we're now kind of in the period between Epiphany and Lent. So within that period, I want to try something with chestnuts because they're still in season for a little bit longer. I want to make galette and crepe because obviously Pancake Day is around the corner. The start of Lent will be not too far away. I want to make king cake, which, you know, obviously it's made for Mardi Gras. So that's just before Lent and the period leading up to it from about now, really, because of Epiphany being associated with the kings. I also want to make semla buns, which I'll make, around just before Lent, I guess. I made those last year, which you might have heard in a previous episode, and they're like a Swedish bun that is filled with almond cream, and they are delicious. I want to make hot cross buns, very traditional British bake. that I think we usually have like actually around Easter time, so around Good Friday, because they have a cross on them, or at actual Easter Sunday. So I can make those a little bit later. I want to make saffron buns, which are a sort of variation on that. Apparently we're more traditional in Cornwall and among Methodists for some reason. I also want to make rice pudding because it just feels a bit like if I don't make it soon, then I'm going to have to wait until next autumn. And that feels too far away. So I'm going to try and squeeze in a rice pudding at some point. And then I also want to use some things that are still in season. So they're not grown here, but pineapples and oranges are still in season, and clementines. And also apples are still in season, and dates. So I want to try and use some of those things. Then from late spring to summer, I'm thinking about trying some frozen desserts, some meringue desserts, and maybe those more complex, you know, fine pastry type of things. And I want to use the fruits and veg that are in season. So I'm thinking strawberries, courgettes, apricots, plums, blackcurrants, cherries, peaches, raspberries, things like that. Then from autumn to Thanksgiving, I really want to try out more pies. So I absolutely loved making Melissa Clark's apple pie this year. It was fabulous, by the way. Stunning. So I think this year I might try out making sweet potato pie or pumpkin pie, because I've not done that before. Any tips or recipes are very welcome. One thing is that it's quite hard here to find the pumpkin puree that you get in tins in the US. So there are recipes for like roasting the pumpkin or boiling it, whatever, and then mashing it. But if you've got any top tips for me, do let me know. And then in terms of seasonal stuff for autumn to Thanksgiving time, things like apples, figs, pumpkin. So that's what I'm hoping for. And then when we get into Advent and Christmas baking, this is so exciting. I want to try some Dutch bakes next year. So I want to try something called Banket Stuff, which is an almond puff pastry log. I know, sounds incredible. I also want to try Gevulde Speculaas, which is like this heavy spiced cake, but it's incredibly delicious. It's the same spice combination that you get in Biscoff or Speculoos cookies. So Gevulde Speculaas, and I found a family recipe, so I'm hoping to use that. And I also want to make mince pies again, because I make mince pies every single year. They're the most popular traditional kind of British Christmas baking thing, other than, I guess, Christmas pudding and Christmas cake, which you don't really eat in the lead up to Christmas as much. So they're the kind of mince pies are more of an Advent thing, I guess. I love them, absolutely love them. And my brother served up some mince pies this year that were incredible. Like, I love you, Auntie Christine, if you're listening, but I think that these might be my favourites now. And it's one of those funny things where he got it off somebody who's working at my sister-in-law's school, and they like forced her to keep coming back. Well, they were like, oh, you're gonna, even after she'd retired, this teacher was like coming back into school to deliver mince pies. And then after a few years, she was like, guys, I'm pretty tired of doing this. So my sister-in-law asked for the recipe, and damn, it's the shortest pastry, like, and the most balanced mince pie ever. It was so incredible. So I'm hoping to make those. I harassed him for the recipe and got it. And also, I want to carry on doing the German Christmas baking that I most enjoyed this year, which I think, as much as I enjoyed making Stollen, and the Hausfreunde were nice, the best things that I think I made were Shauna Seaver's Lebkuchen, the aged ones. That was amazing. Vanilla Kipfel, just literally my favourite biscuit now. And the Linzer cookies, I just loved them. So I'm planning on doing, you know, those at Christmas next year. So that's my baking resolutions and my year of baking. I'm very excited. Hopefully I won't exhaust myself too much. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about sweetbreads and sweet doughs in particular, the brioche that I made and the Tangzhong method. So let's talk about Tangzhong first. So it is slightly absurd that I'm only getting around to recommending this recipe now. I did actually try it a while ago, to be fair to myself, but the recipe is King Arthur Flowers Pillow Soft Cinnamon Rolls. And the reason why I'm saying it's absurd is because it was their recipe of the year for 2021. And they were heavily plugging it like all the time on social media. So I was fully aware of them. I eventually got around to trying them out a few months ago and it was really excellent, really lovely. So I really highly recommend them. I love that King Arthur Flour offers grams as well as cut measures in their recipes. I find them really quite reliable usually. And this was an excellent recipe. I did slightly change the filling to have a bit more butter in it, but like that's just a personal preference thing really. And yeah, I also used the dough base and I also made like chocolate and butter fillings and like other type cardamom. So you can kind of use the like dough recipe and then change up the filling if you want to. So I have done that a few times. So I'm just here to really plug that recipe. Like if you follow King Arthur Flour, like you must have seen them like plugging this recipe many times. But yeah, I highly recommend it. Also, just to say, they're very insistent on you using like tape. What's it called? You know, the stuff that you put in your teeth. Can't remember it. But they're very insistent that you have to use that to cut up the dough. And like, maybe it's preferable, but like I'm never going to find that like without having to order it online. It just seems like a complete waste. So I just used a sharp knife or I used my metal like dough scraper, dough divider thing. And you can just use that. It's absolutely fine. Don't let the like pernickety-ness of some of the instructions put you off trying out the actual dough, because the actual dough is the main thing here. The Tangzhong method, where you basically coagulate some of the flour with some milk or water, and then you put that into the main dough. That's the genius of this recipe, because it makes them last for a few days at room temperature. And you don't really lose the moisture for much longer than a traditional like roll. And that's what's, it makes them more soft as a result as well, because you're not losing as much moisture during baking. So it's really all about the Tangzhong method. Yeah, sure, if you can find that like teeth tape stuff, what's it called? Oh god, floss. Oh my goodness. If you can find like unflavored floss, then I guess go for it. But I couldn't find that easily. Here in the UK, like all I've seen is stuff that's like minty flavoured or whatever. So I just couldn't be bothered. So yeah, don't worry too much about following every single thing, but the Tangzhong and the proportions of it are really, really good. So I would recommend trying out the dough. You can even make it into just a loaf. Like I might try that at some point, or I might find a Japanese milk bread recipe and make that. So, but it's all about that brilliant dough. So let's talk about brioche, shall we? So this, I really wanted to sort of challenge myself. I love sweetbreads. I have talked about them a lot before, so I hope it's not too repetitive for you, but these are two different types of sweetbreads that I've not talked about before. And I haven't really had, I guess, the like guts to try brioche. I've always heard that it's quite tricky, but I was very lucky to get Nikki Segnett's book, Lateral Flow. Oh my goodness. I was very lucky to get Nikki Segnett's book, Lateral Cooking. Wow. For Christmas, Lateral Cooking. And it's absolutely fabulous. It's so good. So I really highly recommend it. It's quite thick and like there's a lot to it, but it's just so meticulously researched. And she's so insightful. She's just brilliant. And I just really highly recommend it. It's for the people who are more into kind of creative cooking and baking. And despite it being called lateral cooking, actually a lot of it is baking. There's a lot of baking in there. So it's actually really good for bakers, this book. I highly recommend it. So I took this brioche recipe from her book because it was the one that appealed to me the most. So I'm going to talk through the ingredients first of all. So you need 500 grams of strong white flour. She says that some people do use plain, but I think that that's going to be too hard work. So I stuck with strong white because I think that added the extra gluten is really important because of the huge quantities of fat. You also then want 50 milliliters of milk or water that's slightly warm to the touch. So you're not killing the yeast, but you're also kind of helping it to grow faster than it would be if it was cold water or milk. Because of the quantity, it's not absolutely essential that you use milk here, but I did. So you also want 250 grams of butter, which is a lot. It's more than two sticks of butter. That's actually the size of a whole packet of butter in Britain because we just love butter. I don't think we love it as much as Scandinavian people, but we really, or the French maybe, but we do love our butter. And that butter needs to be softened. So my house isn't the warmest, so I actually had it a bit warmer than room temperature. It needs to be really, really smooshable, but you don't want it too runny or too hot. So smooshable is what you're aiming for, really. You also want 7 grams of salt. If you're using salted butter, maybe reduce that to like 5 or 4, up to you, but you don't want too much because it will, you want enough to flavor it, to, you know, boost the flavor of it, but you also don't want too much because it will inhibit the yeast, as well as maybe tasting too salty. She then says 30 to 60 grams of sugar, which I found so helpful as an instruction. Well, actually, she puts it in tablespoons, but I'm telling you in grams, which is 2 to 4 tablespoons if you'd rather measure it like that. I found that really helpful because it might depend on what you're making the brioche for. For example, if you want to make burger buns, you might want to go on the less like sugar side. You still want the sugar though, because actually I think that's what's so good about brioche burger buns when they're good, is that you've got very slight sweetness in that dough. But you might not want to go the full whack of 60 grams, you know, if you're making like burger buns or hot dog rolls or something like that. Whereas if you're planning on having it with lemon curd like I did, which was incredible, by the way, or if you're planning on having it with, I don't know, chocolate spread or something, then you might want to do the slightly higher, up to you. So you then want 12 grams of instant or easy bake yeast. And so she says a tablespoon, and that's, I measured it by grams and that's how much it was. You could instead use 15 grams of dried yeast, but you'd want to wake it up in the tepid milk first to check it's, you know, good to go. And then you want 5 eggs. So mine were 60 grams of each. Now I've realized that over the last year I've been doing this podcast or more, I've actually been telling you the wrong measurements. Like 60 grams is actually a UK, it's actually the high end of a UK medium egg. So it's only a US large. So I'm hoping that's going to be helpful for you. So the eggs that I tend to use are around 60 grams each. And that's kind of like high end of UK medium, low end of UK large. So if you're getting US large eggs, they're probably fine, actually. You don't necessarily have to get extra large eggs there. But you could also obviously measure them by grams. So 5 times 60, and that's within their shells, by the way. And you also want an extra yolk for egg washing the buns or the bread before you bake it. Okay, so those are our ingredients. Let's talk about the method. So the first thing you're doing is mixing it. So you're going to mix the dry ingredients. So what I prefer to do when I'm making bread is I will mix together the flour, salt and sugar and just get that really well mixed. Then I add my yeast, because obviously if you're putting the salt or sugar too close to the yeast, it could either inhibit it or make it go crazy if it's the sugar. So I prefer to like get it, that other stuff evenly mixed first and then add my yeast. But I know there are other methods of doing this. Like sometimes some people put the yeast on one side and the salt on the other in their mixer, like up to you. That's just my preferred method. Then you add the tepid milk and the eggs. So you might want to pre-beat those eggs, which is what I did, and mix that to form a dough. Now, personally, I prefer to use my Danish dough whisk here because I just find that it gets into the kind of like nooks and crannies, the corners of the bowl. Not that a bowl has corners, but you know what I mean? It gets into all those harder to reach places. So that's what I prefer to use. But you could use your kneading attachment on your stand mixer if you're lucky enough to have one. But you could even use just a fork. Like I was doing that for a very long time with bread making and it served me well. The dough whisk is better, but if you don't have one, the fork will do. It might just take a little bit longer to mix. So once that's all mixed together into a sort of roughly even dough, I then like to leave it, because I find that just for like 10 to 30 minutes, I leave it, and that's something, the step is called autolyse. You most commonly see that in sourdough recipes, but I've just started doing it for all bread. And my reasoning is it's much easier to knead the dough after a short rest, because basically the flour is absorbed better by the moisture, or the flour absorbs the moisture more evenly. And the gluten actually starts to develop already with as well during that time. So I just think it's kind of on my mixer that I would love to keep for, you know, decades. It's kind of on my mixer motor, it's kind of on me, and I just find it like a better method. So I do that, but you don't have to. You could start kneading straight away. So once you've mixed and rested, if you choose to rest, you then will knead, and basically you're just kneading it until it's smooth and elastic, just like a normal dough. So you might want to check that it's passing that like window pane or whatever. Or you just, you know, if you bake bread quite a lot like I do, you will know from looking at the dough pretty much. Once you've kneaded it and it's smooth and elastic, you have to do that like first, really, really important, because next you're going to be adding like a ton of butter. So you need to get that gluten really well developed before you add the butter. She says, people have tried to do it all in one and they have failed. So I was like, okay, well, I'm not failing. So I will be a good girl, follow the instructions and do my kneading first before I add my butter, because all of that fat will really inhibit the production of gluten. So you then add your mushy butter bit by bit, stopping sometimes to scrape the sides and the bottom of the mixer. Now, what I should have said earlier is that I did use my my KitchenAid for this, which I'm lucky enough to have one. She says that, Nikki Segnet says, that you can do it by hand, but it is both an experience and an ordeal, which I just found hilarious, that instruction, really funny. So you can do this by hand, but bear in mind that it will take quite a long time to add all of that butter in by hand, but you can do it. And actually, I was smooshing the butter in a bit before I was kneading it again with each addition, because I just found that it was kneading it in more evenly. So yes. Now, once you've added all of that butter, you know, the whole 250 grams, and it's all evenly incorporated, you then cover the bowl and then you'll leave it for its first rise. So probably 1 to 2 hours or maybe a bit more in a warm place until it's significantly puffy or doubled in size. So she says that brioche is quite fussy and you need to be a bit patient with it because it can take longer, you know, due to the fat content, etc. Now, because of my lifestyle, I found it easier to instead give it a very slow rise in the fridge overnight. So I left it in the fridge for 12 hours and then I proceeded with the recipe. So you can always throw dough in the fridge. It's such a useful thing to know, isn't it? You can always throw bread dough in the fridge if you want it to rise more slowly. And, you know, if your recipe says 1 hour, you know, room temperature or whatever, roughly that's overnight. Like roughly that would be 8 hours in the fridge. If it says 1 to 2 hours like this one did, it might be around 12. Depends on lots of factors, including how cold your fridge is and, you know, the yeast quantities, etc. But just as a rough guide, you know, you can often leave dough in the fridge overnight if you need to. So that's what I did. I think as well, it's a kind of cheats way to getting more flavour as well, is to do really slow rises. So that's the other reason I like it, because it basically you get a bit more of the sort of lactic acid from the lactobacillus bacteria. So it can impart a slightly more sour flavour into the finished bread, which is quite nice, particularly if you're making it's more important with something like pizza, I think, but anywho. So after this, you then shape it and rise it again. Now, Nikki actually says to give it 3 rises, but again, my lifestyle, that wasn't going to happen. So what I did was I just shaped it and then I gave it another very long rise, and that's absolutely fine. You just need to make sure it's risen enough. That's the key thing. It's not giving it, you know, the exact timings or anything like that. So what I did was I went for 9 buns that weighed roughly 120 grams of dough each, but you could make instead 2 loaves, or you can make another shape, whatever you like. And then you want to leave that to rise. So she says to leave it to rise overnight for 12 to 16 hours and then followed by a warm rise of a few hours. But you could do what I did, which is just leave it in the fridge for ages. So I left it in the fridge. I turned it around occasionally because the front of the fridge tends to be warmer than the back. It's just to get it kind of more even. But it took a full 24 hours for mine to be ready to bake. And what you're looking for, as with all bread really, you're looking for, if you press the dough lightly with your fingertip, it should make an impression for a few seconds and just slowly spring back. If it springs back immediately, it's not ready, it's not risen as much as it could have. If the fingerprint stays for ages, that means that it's a bit overproofed actually. So you just want to bake it as soon as you can. It might like be a little bit flatter as a result of being a bit overproofed, but obviously it's always better to bake it and eat it rather than just waste it. But yeah, that's the ideal, is a fingertip to make an impression for a couple of seconds and slowly spring back. We're nearly there. You then need to egg wash and bake it. So this is something I've learned over the years from various food writers. So if you want a shiny top, you use egg white. If you want a brown top, you use egg yolk. So what I do now is actually, and some recipes call for you to thin out the egg yolk with water or milk, but my kind of preferred method these days is I use the whole yolk and then I thin it with enough egg white for it to be like brushable consistency with my pastry brush. So that's what I do, is I just thin out the egg yolk with a little egg white, and then it means that it's got a bit of shine, but it's the more important thing for me is the browning, because I think it gives more flavor and it looks great. You know, that golden brown is ideal, isn't it? I also sprinkle the top with demerara sugar. Obviously, if you're making burger buns, you might prefer to use sesame seeds or just not use extra sugar. But yeah, up to you. Now, I baked my buns in a 9-inch or 23 centimeter square tin, which was teeny tiny. They did stay in buns. They were like pull apart buns kind of thing. They rose really, really well in a really great oven spring. And I think that's another advantage of baking from cold and baking from the fridge, is that you get slightly better oven spring a lot of the time, apparently. I don't know what the science is behind that, or if it's, you know, I don't know how accurate it is, but that's a lot of food writers say that. So it did, yeah, it was a bit of a, it wasn't a singular mass, but they were all joined together. And they took longer than the recipe stated too. So the recipe says 190°C, which is 375 Fahrenheit, for 20 to 25 minutes. I think that it was just such a huge like mass that it took longer. So mine took 35 minutes. So I looked up some advice online, because I was just like, this is a really different dough from what I'm used to, so how do I know when it's ready? So I found out that, as well as it sounding hollow like a normal loaf, you're also looking for it to reach an internal temperature of 190 degrees Fahrenheit or 87 degrees Celsius. So that was really useful. So I got out my little thermometer and used it. So yeah, that's the brioche recipe. In terms of things that I would maybe change next time, so I always struggle with my oven. It's just such a crap oven. I moan about it pretty much every episode, but maybe one day I will be able to actually choose my oven. But it's just a really ancient gas oven that my landlord installed, and you know, he's not really bothered about changing it to benefit us. We're still paying the rent, so he's fine. It burns everything on the bottom and sides, basically. And I think the other thing is that I was using quite a kind of dark coloured tin, quite thick metal as well. So I might try using my white enamel tin next time. I also would probably space out my buns a bit more, because they were a bit of a mass. So I would maybe use a bigger tin. I might try baking two loaves. But again, because one of my loaf tins is black and thick metal, it just burns everything within, you know, in my rubbish oven. So I might have to first invest in a second good loaf tin that suits me. So we'll see. But I will try out making a loaf at some point, I reckon. But yeah, other than those slight notes, like, this was just incredible. Like, I loved these. I don't have enough words to describe how much I love brioche. It's just, you can get brioche like all over the place in the UK. I don't know if it's the same where you live, but we get loads of brioche, but it's just crap brioche. It's like these little finger rolls in the supermarket that are just naff. Like, there's not really proper butter in them. They're just soft and sweet, basically. But that's the only similarity to brioche. So making my own was phenomenal. It wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. You just have to be quite patient with it. And obviously, if you have a stand mixer, then that's a lot easier than doing it by hand. But yeah, like, I am definitely going to make brioche again. And I can't wait. Like, it's just phenomenal bake. It, because of the amount of fat, it lasts well, you know, at room temperature for a few days, and then you can also freeze it, you know, and get out rolls at a time or whatever you want to do, or slices at a time. So it was phenomenal, and we really enjoyed this. We particularly enjoyed warming it up in the oven for a few minutes, and then you get it all like toasty, and then we spread on lemon curd. And the sharpness of the lemon curd with the richness of the brioche was just like a fabulous, fabulous combination. So, phew, yes, that was excellent. We also are going to have some, I think, tomorrow morning for our breakfast with some chocolate spread. So I'm thrilled about that. But yeah, I'm going to be making brioche, like, more. And I might make burger buns at some point. I am vegetarian, but theoretically I do occasionally break it. But I feel like at some point I might cave and make burgers, like with actual meat, I mean. So yeah, I might do that at some point. But this was phenomenal. And like, I can't encourage you enough to try out making brioche, because it's not as hard as you think. And the results of like a proper homemade brioche, whew, they're just like so worth it. So I've ranted on enough about brioche for now. And next, in the next segment, we will be talking about some other things that you can do with sweet doughs and sweet breads. So right, this is our final segment of today's episode, and it's things to do with sweet doughs and breads, okay? Now, this is heavily informed by, again, I'm going to plug it, Nikki Segnett's wonderful, brilliant, amazing book, Lateral Cooking. So it's quite heavily kind of informed by that. However, I have added some of my own like knowledge as well. So, right, so tarte trebezienne, which is a sort of brioche dough that is a kind of big, like flat-ish kind of loaf. And it's flavoured with orange blossom. And it's got like in the middle, it's kind of cut in half lengthways. And in the middle, it's got like some kind of cream filling. So it might be creme patissiere, it might be buttercream, might be both. It might be another cream filling. And it's got also, it's sprinkled, I think, with pearl sugar on the top, I believe. I've not actually had one, but it looks fabulous. And it's called tarte trebezienne because it was invented in Saint-Tropez. Semla buns. So tried these last Easter. They were gorgeous. Try them. They're fabulous. It's an almond cream filled bun that you have around Easter in Sweden. Cardamom rolls, cinnamon rolls, and variations of those. Again, really popular in Scandinavia, these, but you get them in a lot of places. I've seen ones with dates, with a bit of apple added, lots of variations. I love the very traditional cardamom rolls personally, with the actual seeds in them. And also, you could use it as an alternative to puff pastry in some sort of upside down tart, right? So that's a suggestion from Lateral Cooking, which is very intriguing to me. So you know how you would put like apples at the bottom of a tart or another fruit, and then you put the puff pastry on top and then you bake it, doing that but with brioche dough. So also you could fill it with some sort of custard and or fruit in maybe another iteration. You could also encase soft cheese within it before you bake it, like brie or camembert. My mouth is watering just thinking about that. Like, oh my God. If there's one thing that I love as much as baking, it's cheese. It is cheese. I used to be a cheesemonger. If you want me to talk about cheese at some point, more than happy to. So another one that I found in Lateral Cooking was chocolate and Sichuan pepper. So this is an invention from the Parisian pâtissier Gontran Cherrier. I hope I'm saying that correctly. And he invented it because it pairs well with things that he tends to serve. So, or that maybe restaurants that he supplies to as well. So the like pepperiness, for want of a better word, the heat and also the, you know, complexity of the chocolate, apparently pairs really well with foie gras or with strawberry jam. Very intriguing. You can also flavour sweet buns with orange flower water, as in the tarte trapezienne, but also as in pop de roi and king cake and mouna, which are all different variations of that on a kind of theme. And I think, yeah, like king cake is, you know, a French, something that French migrants brought over to the US, and it has rightly changed a lot over the years because food should evolve. People should, like, you know, people should riff on things. People shouldn't, I don't think, take it too seriously or think that recipes are unchangeable. But, you know, the traditional king cake does a lot of the time have orange blossom water in it. Also panettone. I was very amused to find out that apparently some French people kind of looked down on panettone as like brioche's, you know, lesser cousin. They just think it's, you know, you're kind of messing with perfection by adding the different extracts and the, you know, all of the different flavorings and stuff, but whatever. Also, you could use praline with sweet dough. I hadn't really considered that before, but it's very intriguing. So the Pralou confectioners near Lyon made a praluline brioche with a nut and sugar mixture. Very intriguing. You can also pair sweetbreads with sausage. So apparently in Lyon, sausage rolls are like made with brioche dough. Or in Mallorca, there's something called ensaimada, which is sausage in a brioche dough, or with a brioche bread, which sounds really interesting. You can use leftover brioche in things like bread and butter pudding, which is a very heavy but delicious British dessert. A lot of our traditional baking is very heavy, but it is really good. So it's basically like bits of bread that you bake in custard, and you might put extra butter in there especially if you're not using brioche, because it's already a lot of butter. But yeah, and you can flavour that in different ways as well. You could flavour it with saffron, with cinnamon, you can add chocolate, you can make a chocolate custard. Like, there's many, many variations of bread and butter pudding to be enjoyed. You could make pan de muerto. You could use sweet bread with hot dogs, with burgers. You could toast brioche and serve it with pâté and cornichon. You know, obviously very popular to do that in France and in fine dining. And also, this is really interesting, in my opinion, brioche dough is what is used to make beignets. So yeasted donuts are obviously the superior donut, right? Like, come on. They're just much more interesting, much better, much fluffier, just wonderful. But yeah, apparently that's what is used. Something like a brioche or a brioche is what's used to make beignets, which, if you're not familiar with them, they are a sort of donutty thing. You know, it's fried dough that you then like roll in sugar, basically. And they're particularly New Orleans is particularly famed for beignets. So that was my little whistle stop tour of some of the things that you can do with sweetbreads and sweet doughs. But I'm sure there are others. You know, feel free to write to me. It's flourbuttersugar@gmail.com. If you've got flourbutteregsugar@gmail.com. If you've got any suggestions of, you know, things that you would like other people to be aware of, things that you want me to try out, whatever. If you have a go at making your own brioche, I would love to know about it. Let me know. But yeah, that's kind of it for this episode. And like, I've really enjoyed talking to you. It's been wonderful. So thank you so much for listening. And just the last thing I'm going to do is tell you what is coming up next. Had to go and actually consult my notes because I'd totally forgotten what's coming up next. But basically, it's my birthday quite soon. So I might be trying out like something new for my birthday, which is quite exciting, but I doubt I will have done that in time for the next episode. So I think the next episode is probably going to be about cheesecakes, a couple of surprising cheesecakes. So that's what I'm going to be talking about. But I also might tell you about my, if you're interested, hopefully, I might give you a bit of a review of something I'm doing tomorrow, well, actually today, because this episode's coming out on Sunday. I'm going to be going on a cheese tour and a cheese making day, and I'm so unbelievably excited. As I said earlier, like, cheese is my favourite thing along with baking. I did used to be a cheesemonger. I used to be an expert in European and British cheeses and served, you know, the likes of people like Nigel Slater, Nigella Lawson, served those, that type of people cheese, as well as lots of other lovely customers. It's something I just love. If the money had been better and the conditions had been better, maybe I would still be a cheesemonger now. But I decided, no, I'm going to train for a more middle class job than what I was doing. I mean, obviously there are a variety of jobs, but what I was doing wasn't very well paid. But I still love cheese. I don't get sick of it. I used to eat it every day, and I'm still not sick of it. I love it. So I'm going on a tour. My partner paid for me for my birthday and Christmas present to go to a local cheesemaker's, like an urban cheesemaker's, because I live in North London. And, you know, they're going to show us how to make various different types of cheese. And then we get to take a few away with us and mature them at home. So I'm extremely excited about this. Like, I'm looking forward to it more than I can even say. And I might just share a few of my highlights with you, if that's okay, next episode. So that's what's coming up, cheesecake and a cheese tour. If you don't like cheese, maybe the next episode isn't the one for you. But anyway, it's been a pleasure and a joy talking to you as usual. I hope that you are enjoying that the podcast is getting a bit more professional. I'm really trying to teach myself how to do things at the moment. So let me know what you think. Any ideas that you've got for season two, let me know. Do find us on Facebook and Instagram, and go to the website for recipes, flourbuttereggssugar.com. And all right, until next time, see you in 2 weeks. Bye.